Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis await conservatives this morning. And Jim, let's start with the good, and this is a genuine good, as you put it in the email this morning, and that's that it is getting harder and harder for President Obama to get his nominees through the Senate, which is kind of ironic since the Senate Democrats recently changed the confirmation rules that most nominees from the president can't be filibustered, yet they're not even being able to get to that 51 threshold. We saw it a couple of weeks ago with the president's nominee to head the Civil Rights Division at the Justice Department. Now his nominee to be the Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy. They're looking at least 8 to 10 Democrats who aren't ready to vote for that yet, so there's not enough votes to move that. We've obviously seen in different clips on the internet and elsewhere the slew of Obama political nominees for ambassadorial positions who have been, let's just say, pathetic in their knowledge of the countries they're supposed to be connecting the United States with, could potentially be related to the fact that Democrats know that they've got a lot of defense to play already this year and they're not ready to take on new controversies. But whatever's happening here, the president's less than qualified nominees in many cases are not being rubber stamped.
I look at this and I just have this unbelievable glee because you look at the fury that this is stirring amongst liberals and folks who are used to getting what they want from the Obama administration. I think one of my favorite assessments comes from Business Week, a columnist named Paul Barrett, who says this is his defense of Dr. Murthy, declaring it a ludicrous opposition. He's vowed to make fighting obesity his main priority. He also happens to hold standard urban liberal views on firearm regulation. See, Greg, they're standard. He's free to have those views. And, you know, senators, both Republican and Democrat, who count on the support of the NRA and their elections, are free to voice their opposition to that. And, you know, I think one of the things that a lot of gun owners, a lot of folks who support the Second Amendment say, whatever you think of it, you know, it's a legal issue. It's a constitutional issue. It's pretty open and shut case about, you know, the way they interpret the Second Amendment. The argument that it's a public health bill, well, you know, a gun is only dangerous if somebody shoots it at you. You know, it's not like there's secondhand smoke from the smoking barrel or something like that. So this seems like a way of co-opting the medical profession into a tool of liberal policy goals. And so unsurprisingly, they're not enamored with it. It's also kind of fun in this column where he points out that Democrats like to say that the NRA is a paper tiger, and now we're seeing pretty obviously it is not one, because they got about 10 Democrats who are believe that if they go against the NRA on an issue such as this, they're going to lose. What makes this particularly delicious is that, you know, you can't blame this on the Republicans. The Republicans are in the minority in the Senate. You can't blame this on the filibuster. Harry Reid may reintroduce the filibuster, because then he could use it as an excuse to not bring controversial votes to the floor and not get Democrats on record as opposing the administration, causing great embarrassment to the Obama administration, and further underlining in red ink, the kind they use for red lines, that the president is a lame duck. And so this is just kind of an unexpected victory. It kind of also indicates, you know, as this article notes, that Democrats still remember how the assault weapons ban hurt them. They basically are realizing they don't have a winning hand in the Senate, even though they have 5 more votes than this, because there are at least 5 and probably 10 red state or what you might call conservative Democrats who are very wary about what votes they cost. He also says something about the administration. As they say in this Politico article, he says, look, there are a lot of perfectly fine non-controversial choices you could make as a Surgeon General, right? I mean, just pick a guy who doesn't try to use his medical degree to bolster his creds to argue for the banning of guns. And if they did that, you know, most Surgeon Generals are fairly nonpartisan, you know, slam dunk votes. So what says here is that the Obama administration is forcing ideology where it doesn't need to. And if they were wise, they would be a little more choosy about what battles they want to fight.
On to martini number 2 now, Jim. And the good news, according to the mainstream media, is that even though they're 2 million short with about 2 weeks left in the enrollment period for Obamacare for year one, we're at 5 million enrollees. But as Jim points out today in the Morning Jolt, you got to read the fine print. First of all, they won't tell you how many have paid their initial premium. You've got a lot of people paying a lot more for less coverage. Families are paying on an average of $663 a month now, and singles $274 a month, far more than before Obamacare kicked in. So good news, everybody.
Once again, we see the administration bragging about the enrollment for a program you are legally required to purchase or else pay an extra special fee. So You know, if you had to pay $95 or 1% of your income if you did not subscribe to National Review, which I'm not saying we have a bad policy, Greg. I actually would support something like that. But let's say we had it and subscriptions went up. I don't think the subscription department would be able to pat itself on the back that hard. Wow, we're doing a fantastic job of getting people to sign up. As you mentioned, the real thing, and this is what really is scaring people away, because you ask people in the abstract, would you like to have health insurance? Sure. Do you want to pay 600 some bucks a month? No. Most people would say, hey, you're single. You want to pay 275 a month? No. You know, most people don't want to. Of course, the prices are much higher. And remember, this was going to save the average family $2,500 a year. Unsurprisingly, people are choosing the bronze plans, which are the ones that have the lowest monthly, you know, premium, highest deductible, and often in some cases, highest copays. Finally, something just jumped out at me, and I feel like it's just kind of worth noting here. The Council of Better Business Bureaus, the folks you call when you get lousy service or somebody tries to scam you or something, says that the Affordable Care Act scam is the scam of the year. And they don't mean the actual legislation. We should make that little asterisk there. what it is that people will call up saying, oh, because of Obamacare, we need your, you know, all kinds of personal information, your Social Security number, your bank account number. We need this for your new Medicare card. And, you know, unfortunately, there are a lot of people in this world who, when someone who sounds official and government-y calls up demanding information, they'll give it because they want to get in trouble. And lo and behold, they're victims of fraud. Their bank accounts have been cleared out or credit card numbers have been used and all that kind of stuff. You know, as much as, you know, Democrats say, well, it's not the fault of the administration. Well, when you enact this hugely complicated piece of legislation that nobody, you know, that the legislators themselves admit they haven't really read, it's all instituted by unelected, unseen bureaucrats who change the rules every 5 minutes, and nobody really understands it, you're basically setting the stage for fraudsters and scam artists and stuff like that. And so it's another round of Obamacare victims, and this is a story that's getting, you know, you'll get the occasional Consumer Reports type story, but unfortunately it's been very hard to get actual numbers on how many people have fallen victim to these scams. You know, just kind of infuriating. One more side effect that was completely avoidable had we not passed this monstrosity.
And so there could be work being done to perhaps repeal part or all of it, or at least radically reform the worst parts of the legislation, but that is not happening. Also, the president, as we know yesterday, delivered a whole 4 minutes from the White House press room in response to the vote in Crimea and the expectation, of course, which has now basically come to fruition, that Crimea will become part of Russia. So the president's schedule, as we transition to the crazy martini, is not exactly focused on what you might think it is. While he is headed to Europe next week, his scheduled today, this evening, will be to attend a fundraiser for the Democratic National Committee, his first fundraiser for the DNC since last Tuesday. This is from Jim's campaign spot. On Thursday, he goes to Orlando for an event on the economy, followed by fundraisers in Miami for the DNC and the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Jim, you didn't include this, but I'm sure he'll find time in there to squeeze in his NCAA picks.
Yeah, oh, the NCAA picks. So here's one thing that really – Brett Stevens has a good column just, you know, ripping the president a new one for being fundamentally unserious when there is this major crisis brewing overseas. As you mentioned, his statement on Ukraine took an entire 4 minutes and was almost there was almost 1 minute for each person targeted by the sanctions. Right, Greg?
Yeah.
Like seven Russians. Now, look, here's the thing. Now, maybe those are seven really important Russians, but I think a lot of people, including Charles Krauthammer, are saying it's not really that intimidating. And I saw this morning that the Russian Duma, the parliament over there, people can't see it, but I'm making air quotes as I say parliament, basically said, look, put all of us on the sanctions list. We all want to stand together against you guys. So obviously not very intimidating to the Russians over there. I had missed this. On Friday, President Obama called in to do a radio interview with Ryan Seacrest. Yes. Of, you know, American Idol and things like that. And, you know, you know what he discussed in that interview with Ryan Seacrest, right, Greg?
Well, I'm sure he made an Obamacare sign-up pitch, but what else?
True. The Obamacare sign-up pitch was in there, but also he talked about the interview he did with Zach Galifianakis, Snuffleupagus, you know, the guy from the Hangover movies. So we have Obama doing a silly celebrity interview discussing his previous silly celebrity interview while Russia takes over Eastern Europe. And it's probably the perfect, you know, encapsulation of the celebrity in chief. He does these things. He does much fewer hard news interviews. He does one fundraiser after another. If you thought re-election would slow down his fundraising schedule, it doesn't. My theory is that Obama does this because this is what he knows how to do. And then when he's presented all kinds of bad options of dealing with Russia and Putin, he just kind of, meh, you know, I'll go out and pro forma go out, announce the sanctions, and then get over it so he can get back to the part of the job that he likes, which is spawning celebrity interviews and fundraisers. And, you know, if only aggressive fundraising could turn back the Russian aggression.
I'm sure this is how Reagan handled the shooting down of the South Korean airliner.
KAL007 and all that. Yeah.
As Jim says, we laugh because otherwise we would cry. Jim, good to have you back. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.